The soft thuds of fabric hitting the hard carpeted floors filled my ears, even with the festive music on. And Alex hoisted me up to curl my legs around his waist, his signature move, and walked me around the room. He always opted for the jacuzzi, the balcony, or while I was bent over the kitchen alcove. He liked it awkward and savage, the unphotoshopped version, as he'd called it. Alex dumped me onto the cold sheets of the bed, and I arched my back. The sheer surprise of him wanting to do it in bed startling me. He dragged his teeth along my skin, and I wrapped his hair around my fingers, giving him better access to everything. When he kissed his path down my stomach, I started feeling the butterflies swirling around my belly, my sex tightening around nothing in anticipation. He was always so smug, like he had the world at his feet, and he really did. That was perhaps the entire irony of it all, but never when we were in bed together. When it was just us, his lips hovering over mine, his thick cock grinding into my body, he looked humble and grateful and pained. His mouth found my sensitive bud, and he started playing with it as I let go, forgetting about my family and my heartbreak and the discarded plate of French fries that made the room smell funny. It was just me and him. Me, him, and the pleasure.
"I need to fuck you,"
he murmured, his voice vibrating and tickling my inside.
"I need to be inside you the way you're inside me. So deep I want to peel my skin off just to get rid of you. I need to get rid of you,"
he repeated, and my heart dropped, my breath catching in my throat as my clit began to throb, my lower lip shaking with an impending orgasm that had threatened to ripple through me like a storm. He loved to suck on my clit so hard my vision dotted with thick white clouds. "No," my voice quivered, my pelvis rocking into his mouth as he began to thrust his tongue into me over and over. He was relentless, dirty and shameless, like the way he spread his fingers under the back of my thighs and pushed me back and forth to make his tongue go deeper and deeper into me. Or the way he pressed his cock to my thigh until his zipper tore at my leggings from grinding me so roughly. "I told you, I'm never going to sleep with you," I said under my breath. But it was a lie, and we both knew that. There was no difference between sleeping with him and letting him eat me out every night, finger me at public dinners and play with my nipples while he was talking on the phone with Jenna, yelling at her about some appearance he'd never agreed to do. He chuckled into my warm flesh.
"But I'll break you."
"You already did. Today." I said nothing to that. My thighs began to shake uncontrollably, and my mouth dropped into an O as I clutched tighter into his hair. I was sure it was painful for him, but he didn't complain. He never complained. For all the jackass things he did outside of the bedroom, once the clothes were off, he made me feel comfortable. Comfortable to scream, to moan, and to demand. Comfortable to hungrily suck on his shaft and wipe the drool with the back of my hand at how incredibly aroused he'd made me by simply looking at me the way he had. Like touching each other would take all our troubles away. I came hard on his tongue. He flipped me over, and before I had the chance to protest, mounted me, burying his cock between my ass cheeks, completely bare, and sliding up and down.
"Oh, fuck," he said.
He loved doing things to me from behind. I think it was because he knew I could see everything on his face when we were together, the worry and sadness and fear. We weren't having sex, not technically, but boy was it getting harder and harder to tell myself I had red lines with this guy. I needed to just give in to him already, give in to myself, ask him to put a condom on and have sex with me. But not putting out made me feel like I was in control, and I craved that no less than I craved his body. His cock pulsated between my cheeks, and I felt the warm pre-cum gathering at my tailbone. I didn't know why I found it so stupid hot to have him masturbate on me this way, but I quickly pushed against him, taunting him, prompting him to smash into me from behind. I didn't know what I was doing, not fully. I was too delirious with lust and relieved at his reason for heartbreak. I shouldn't have taken pleasure in knowing he was devastated about Tanya breaking, but at least it wasn't about Fallon.
Why do you taunt me?
He fisted my hair and pulled me up, making me arch my back. Once my stomach rose from the mattress, he used his other hand to play with one of my tits, pinching my nipple on a hiss.
Why do you take so much pleasure in driving me mad?
My skin prickled with goosebumps at his menacing tone. To get even. My voice was hoarse, suffocated by the position we were in, my neck fully extended as he rubbed himself harder and harder into my ass, his thrusts almost punishing, both to him and to me, for not being able to penetrate me. Just returning the favor, Mr. Rockstar.
I think we're on a first-name basis now, Stardust.
His dick started twitching along my skin, and I knew he was about to burst. His teeth dragged over my neck.
Seeing as next time we do this, I'm going to be so balls deep inside you, I'll be able to tickle your fucking lungs.
With that, he came on my back. I felt the ribbons of hot cum on my skin. He then collapsed on the bed, disconnecting from me like I was nothing but a container to put his sperm in. My face was still buried inside the pillow, which was for the best with the way I blushed. I lay there in the same position, waiting for him to say something, to clean me up, seeing as I couldn't do it myself, not unless I got into the shower. I waited for many things, but a few minutes later I heard the door open and shut, and knew he'd left me there like the disposable fuck doll he'd wanted me to feel like. Because when Alex was hurting, he wanted the entire world to hurt with him, and in that moment in time, I was his world. I should have felt disgusted by what he'd done. I should have wrapped myself up in a towel, stormed after him, and given him a piece of my mind. But all I did was smile into the pillow like the stupid, lust-struck girl I was. My Alex, my little prince, my fallen star in the dark, dark skies.
Chapter 21 Alex. Excitement is like a contagious disease. It catches like fire, spreads, and there's nothing you can do about it. You can't tame excitement or piss on someone else's parade when they're truly enthusiastic about something. Which is why I was extra bitter when the cab picked us up from Heathrow Airport and drove us through London up to Watford. Everybody was just so jolly about seeing their families. Blake was staying with his parents down the road from me. Alfie was crashing at a mate's house in Kentish Town. And Lucas was going back to his perfect family in their perfect converted barn. Kent, not Watford. They'd moved somewhere with sheep and fresher air and inbred posh neighbours when the eldest Rafferty graduated from university. All of Lucas's siblings were already married to horsey-looking partners with great jobs. I'd once told him his family put the promise in compromise. Maybe that's why he dedicates his life to ruining yours, arsehole. I had two rooms booked at a London hotel, close to my family, but not too close that I actually had to see them. The rooms were for Indy and me, though I'd asked Hudson to cancel the extra rooms so she and I would finally sleep in the same bed. I wasn't even entirely sure what my feelings toward her were. I just knew she made some of the bullshit go away, and that was enough to pacify me. I missed Tanya. I felt naked moving around the world without her on my back. I'd purchased another acoustic guitar, but she didn't feel the same. She was rough, not soft-wooded like Tanya, the strings too tight. She felt weird on my lap, like an average-looking fangirl begging to be fucked. Every time I tried playing it on the plane, Stardust shot me a look of pity, which made everything so much worse somehow. If there was, indeed, one good thing about the entire Fallon and Will engagement ordeal, it was that now I had fewer restrictions. I wasn't talking to any of the lads, just to Indy, and not too much. But I could go on the internet and watch whatever the hell I wanted. I knew Stardust had been privy to the engagement and the dick pics ordeal, but her betrayal wasn't as soul-crushing. She wasn't my childhood friend. She owed me nothing. In fact, she hadn't even asked to be employed by me, which made everything about the revelation that she knew less stinging. "Ready to go home?" Blake sniffed, staring out the window at the grey London landscape. I didn't answer. The constant drizzle reminded me why I loved my city. It was so unapologetically shitty. Rainy with a chance of a very public meltdown. People came here to survive, not to live. But surviving made you feel so much more alive.
"Would I be able to get a day off? I want to check the London Eye and the dungeon. The House of Parliament, too,"
Indy muttered, her eyes glued to the window. I didn't know why it had surprised me so much. Like I didn't expect her to make any plans other than riding my cock on my face. She always seemed like an open book, eager to be stained by ink in different colours. Everywhere we went, she always wanted to bike around the main streets and eat the local food. Other men might find it cute, her lust for life. But I just found it depressing. She was so much happier than I was, and I had so much more than her. "I'm sure we can sort something out. Right, mate?" Blake elbowed me, his whole body angled toward me. He'd been working hard on being less of a micromanaging cunt since the loss of Tanya. I chose not to answer Blake, again, and flung my arm over Stardust's shoulder, eyeing Lucas, who was looking at me like I'd stabbed him in the soul. "Sounds good. Let's go there together and make some memories," I gritted out. Her head popped up, a skeptical gaze sliding along my face, my jaw, my eyes, my lips. An inventory she knew all too well, which was why pink spread over her cheeks and neck, cluing me in that she absolutely thought about all the things we could do while sightseeing. Grinding into her from behind in the London Eye in front of horrified Japanese tourists, or cornering her in a dark spot at the London Dungeon, sounded like paradise. Half the fun was watching her get flustered and annoyed with the way her body reacted to me in public.
"Whatever happened to you being sexually harassed by people? I thought you didn't do public appearances,"
she teased. I shrugged. "I might have to punch a teenager or two. It'll be on your conscience." Indy couldn't help herself. She shook her head and laughed.
"You're so weird."
"Normal is grossly overrated," I muttered, hating that I cared if she thought it was good weird or bad weird. And I didn't want to break her, not at that moment. It should have been an alarm bell, but I chose to ignore it. By the time I figured out how to cool it was too late. If you ever wondered how Indy would look if she found out I killed every puppy on her street, let me tell you. I now knew. All it took for her to make this expression was telling her she was going to share a room with me. She didn't like the idea. Not one bit. Indy had only found out about our shared accommodation when we were actually in front of our presidential suite's door. She turned around, asking for her digital key. "What key?" I asked with a straight face, prolonging our inevitable showdown. She rubbed her open palm over her nose, which I thought was adorable, another clear warning sign I chose to ignore, and cocked her head sideways.
"The door to my room. What's up, Alex? You're not even jet-lagged."
I placed the card of our shared room in her hand and curled her fingers around it. She said,
"No."
To which I replied, "Did you know the world is suffering from overpopulation and vast waste of natural resources? We're going to save a lot of water and electricity sharing a room for a week."
"We'll be saving a lot of oxygen, too, because one of us ought to strangle the other."
She walked over to the opposite door. She thought I was joking. Clearly, we needed to be doing more talking and a lot less fingering, because this woman didn't understand me. At all. I watched as Indy's smile evaporated gradually from her face each time she slid her key into the slot, and the red dot blinked back at her, spitting out the card. By the fourth attempt, she turned around, stomped her foot, and released a feral growl.
Alex!
For the record, I spared her my shit-eating grin when I leaned against our already open door, arms crossed over my chest.
Alex!
She said again, her tone warning this time, indigo eyes begging me to put her out of her misery. I didn't get it. The only difference between the entire tour and London was that she'd be spending the night next to me. Even that wasn't much of a big deal. I wasn't a spooner. I crooked my finger and motioned for her to come in. She stayed rooted to the floor.
Why?
She asked. Because we're going to write music together, and get drunk on words, and bone against the glass door. Because we make sense. Because I'm tired of your fears. This is our tour, our album, our soul. The thing about being a compulsive liar is at some point, you don't stop and think whether what you said is true or not. But at this point, I knew we shared a soul. It was inside her, and I borrowed it. And I needed it. Losing Tanya was a game changer. I needed Stardust much more. Maybe even after Paris, and I was beginning to accept that the way one accepted a deadly disease, with a healthy dose of disinclination. She peeked behind my shoulder to the empty room, then back at me, her fingers clutching her duffel bag, knuckles bone white.
On one condition.
God, if you exist, please make her not ask for Louboutins or a Porsche. I'm listening.
If we do this, I want you to see your family.
Now, here's the thing. Stardust and I had talked, a lot, about the Little Prince and about music, and yes, about our families. We talked like our life depended on it when we were writing every midnight. She knew everything about my gambling mother and drunk father and slag of a sister. She knew I'd never been hugged as a wee boy, and that I wrote about love in the same way people write about sci-fi, solely from my overworked imagination. Which prompted me to believe she thought my relationship with my family was salvageable. Look, I got it. She didn't have any parents. But living vicariously through me was not the way around it. No. I glued my forehead to the still open door, acutely aware of the fact she was still in the hallway. What was it about us and hallways? Why were we always so reluctant to let the other person in? Note to self. Write a song about it. Foyers, relationships, metaphors, blue-haired girls.
Well, then you better get me a room.
She spun on her heels, advancing toward the lifts. I needed to let her go, and deep down I knew it. But my soul couldn't. So I ended up grabbing her wrist and jerking her back to me. First of all, you don't know my family. A hint of a triumphant smile decorated her lips when she looked up at me.
I know enough. I know you have one. You, Alex, have a family. Everyone needs a family.
That's bullshit. Do you honestly need Craig? Need this wanker's drinking problem? Hot and cold behavior and stupid violent spurts. I couldn't believe we were spending our time fighting instead of fucking. I also couldn't believe how similar Craig and I were. How could she be attracted to a guy who represented every vice that made her life a quiet hell for the last few years? She thought about it. Actually thought about my question, not just spat out an answer, before answering.
Yes, I need Craig. A big part of loving people and feeling loved is taking care of them, even when they infuriate you. You build confidence and security, not only in being taken care of, but also by taking care of your loved ones. I want to help Craig. Hell, I want to change Craig. But that doesn't mean I don't need him. He's my brother.
It was my turn to think. Did I need Carly? No. Or at least I didn't think I needed her. She was never much good at anything, other than popping babies, and I wouldn't touch that department with a 20-foot pole. I didn't need my parents, either. They clung onto my fortune like a skunk's scent, and I only ever spoke to them when I needed to, or the customary Christmas and birthday phone call. But I needed Indy, at least for this tour. I didn't have any illusions about her. She was a girl with small dreams and big problems, and we had nothing in common. Nevertheless, she did make Letters from the Dead bearable, and I needed to keep her close until we finished the tour, and I could give her what she wanted, even if what she wanted was to stab my soul until it bled the rest of its vitality. Because that's what me sitting in the same room with my parents and my sister, watching them drink canned lager and eating unrecognizable fried food from a newspaper funnel, would do to me. Jesus Christ! I waved a dismissive hand her way. I'll meet them, okay? Just get the fuck in here and stop loitering in the foyer. For all I know, they're going to sell the security footage to TMZ, and then I'll be the cock-exposing, washed-up, druggy rock star who also has to beg his babysitter not to leave him alone. She took a step in my direction, her grin infuriating and cock-hardening in equal measures.
You're cute when you beg.
I hooked my finger into her barely existent cleavage and pulled her into me, planting a wet kiss on her smart mouth. We'll see who's going to be doing all the begging tonight.
Chapter 22. Indy. Jenna. I'm not keeping it. Indy. Talk to Blake first. Hudson. Shocked face, shocked face, shocked face. Jenna. Clearly the hormones are taking over my brain. I forgot Hudson was here. Hudson. My baby is having a baby. Jenna. You're not my mother, Hudson. Hudson. I was actually talking about Blake. His Hugh Grant charm makes my panties wet. Hudson. Actually, it doesn't make any sense, but still. Jenna. I swear I'll kill you if you tell anyone. This is top secret. Indy, how's Alex? Indy. Good. Jenna. Elaborate. Indy. He's been writing steadily, and he seems to be really excited about his next album. Jenna. And the 10-minute song? Hudson. He decided to split it into two songs. Jenna. I didn't know he consults you artistically. Hudson.
He does, sometimes, when he sits on the toilet and gets bored.
Hudson.
Where do you think I got the nickname Little Shite? LOL.
Jenna. What made him change his mind? Hudson.
A girl.
Jenna. Elaborate. Hudson.
The right girl. Winky face.
I'm the first one to admit that sometimes you push things to the back of your head to protect yourself from heartbreak, like the memory of losing your dog, or like the time your first crush turned you down, or that your brother is not completely sane and normal and okay. Before I'd gone on tour with Alex Winslow, I'd thought talking to Nat and Craig would be the highlight of my day. Turned out, it was the last thing I'd looked forward to. Every time my cracked phone rang, I half wished it was my credit card company telling me to chill. But it was always Nat, and she was always crying. This time she'd caught me in a relatively good time. Alex was taking a shower, and I was sitting on the king-sized bed in front of the pale green wall, wondering if he knew how close we were getting to the deep end of feels. I should have told him no. Already I was in over my head, and it wasn't just my body that wanted to be claimed. The minute I answered the phone, I realized Alex was the least of my worries. Craig was. Craig was always a worry. Hey, Nat. Why didn't you tell me about the shoebox above the cupboard before you left? She sniffed tiredly. Her voice was different. Wary. Sad. She used to sound like sugar pops exploding in your mouth. Sweet and enthusiastic and open. So open to hug the world and whatever it threw her way. It enraged me that my brother was the one to turn off the light inside her. My eyebrows crinkled. I tried to remember what I'd put in that shoebox. I didn't have too many things of interest or value. Some stupid diary I'd written when I was a kid. Love letters from boys in elementary school. Not that there were many. Some pictures. I squinted toward the curtained wide window overlooking Soho. Then it hit me. All at once. The pictures. Oh, God. Of Mom holding our neighbor's baby, sweet and blonde-curled like Ziggy. Of Dad bouncing Craig on his lap, pointing to the camera, smiling. Of both of them helping us build a faux snowman outside our house one Christmas. When it was so hot out, the ice cream my mom brought us melted in our hands, and another photo from the same day where we all licked our sticky fingers and laughed. Memories. Sweet, precious memories. Memories I was so afraid I was going to forget, I'd had to put them somewhere safe, somewhere that was only mine. Memories I was so afraid to remember, I'd hidden them in a shoebox, on a cupboard, somewhere I couldn't reach easily because going there was toxic. I'd never have them back. They were gone. "Tell me he didn't do anything stupid," I said slowly, hysteria gripping my throat. Craig was not allowed to leave the house. I didn't even want to know what the consequences would be if he had. "He did." She burst into tears, just as Alex walked out of the shower wearing nothing but a towel and a smirk. His dark hair was dripping, just like it did in his gigs, and my lower belly tightened, despite the fact that my heart and mind were an ocean away in America. He shot me a questioning glare, to which I replied by turning my back to him so he couldn't see me at my weakest, with my lip trembling and my nose aching like I'd been punched. "Where?" I cleared my throat, shooting my gaze to the ceiling, steadying my voice. "Where did he go?" I repeated. "Do you know? And when did he leave?" Nat was about to answer me when Alex snatched the cell phone from my hand and put it to his ear. He walked toward the master bathroom of the suite, and I jumped up immediately, stalking after him. The jerk was fast. It was those damn long legs. He could outrun me while crawling.
"Natasha, I want you to call my PA in Los Angeles. He'll help track him down."
Alex jumped into the conversation like he'd been a part of it all along, which made my simmering blood chill a little in my veins.
"Yeah, I'm sure. I've got private investigators to last for a decade in Hollywood and enough connections with the LAPD to take a shit directly on the booker's desk and still get out of there unharmed."
He stopped by the bathroom door, his eyes unblinking. When I half-heartedly went for the phone, throwing my arms in the air to try to grab it, he plastered his palm over my forehead and pushed me away, making us look like a cartoon where the giant is blocking the little mouse who is running aimlessly in the same spot. Even though we were physically comical, there was nothing funny about the way he made me feel. He wanted to help, and right now I knew better than to refuse him. He owed me absolutely nothing. I'd betrayed him by not telling him about Fallon and Will and about the guy's plan with his leaked photos, and all he'd done so far was bail out and now search for my brother.
"Write it down,"
Alex ordered, giving her a cell phone number, then a code you needed to dial to put you through the line. Alex never gave his number out, and normally he didn't need to. Blake and the others were always around. It was weird to think it was just Alex and me now, and even weirder to imagine he'd be actively working for something. Something to do with me.
"Text me when he finds him,"
Alex added, pressing the phone between his shoulder and ear and lighting up a cigarette. He was commanding and forbidding. His expression so distant, you wouldn't think he was dealing with feelings. And this, perhaps, was the part of him that would be my ruin. He was kind, without being kind to me. I parked my waist against the nearby closet facing the bathroom and watched him as he killed the line and tossed my phone across the room and onto the mattress. He swiveled, pointing his cancer stick at me.
"Get dressed."
I shook my head, watching him from under my lashes. "You can't go out. You're a superstar, remember?"
"I'm also a goddamn person. Two bodyguards are on their way here."
"Bodyguards?" My spine straightened on cue. "You hate bodyguards." I didn't even have to ask him to know that it was true. I saw the way he'd reacted every time one or two had had to tag along throughout the tour. Apparently, Alex Winslow was one of the rare celebrities who didn't have full-time bodyguards on their payroll. He just hated being babied. And I was his babysitter. The fact he was nice to me at all was a blessing. He He sauntered past me, grabbed his skinny jeans and black muscle t-shirt, throwing his leather jacket on top, already lacing his army boots.
Hey-ho, let's go.
I didn't peg you for a Ramones fan, I said. Alex was the greatest music snob of all time, especially considering he'd sinned by making sweet Ed Sheeran Let Me Hold You In My Arms music at some point in his career. The glint in his eyes told me I was right.
I'm not. I'm a Let's Go Fucking Eat fan.
One could argue Alex Winslow was one annoying, eccentric, arrogant man, but there was no disputing this weird mixture was enchanting. Slowly, so very slowly, I made my way to the shower, the hot steam still clinging to the glass. He was really going to do it. Get out of the hotel, knowing he was going to get noticed. Alex hated crowds, and people, and the paparazzi. The only humans he was okay with tolerating were his fans. I was worried this might prompt a breakdown, which would later lead to drug use. I hesitated over the threshold, throwing him another look. The paparazzi will probably see us.
I know.
And you don't care?
Giving fucks is not exactly my forte.
He quirked a thick eyebrow, turning on the TV and making himself comfortable on the bed.
Chop chop now, Stardust. I turn into a pumpkin at midnight.
It's noon, and you turn into an artist at midnight, I corrected, stepping out of my dress in front of him. Bare for him, I watched him as he watched me, like he understood me, like our intimacy was a living entity sitting between us, its warm ultraviolet rays caressing me softly.
I'm always an artist. Sometimes I'm an artist who gets screwed over by suits,
he amended, blowing smoke through his nostrils like a vicious dragon and smirking to the ceiling.
Now go.
I had a quick shower, then proceeded to try on a dozen dresses. I knew we were not a couple. Of course I knew that. But I also knew the tabloids would be speculating, and I didn't want to be the mediocre-looking girl with the funky hair and cheap dress. I tied my locks into a loose chignon, tresses of arctic blue waves slipping down my nape, and wore my classic maroon velvet dress. Lipstick, mascara, mental pep talk. I was as ready as one could be. I stepped out of the bathroom. Alex didn't react to me, not at first. He was engrossed with something on his phone, and when he looked up, something on TV caught his attention. I stood there for a few long seconds, my heart vaulting behind my ribcage. For once, I wasn't the one talking to my heart, but it was the one talking to Alex. See us. Feel us. Love us. I was no longer able to quiet it down. My heart wanted Alex to love it. The rest of me did too. And when his head whirled, almost in slow motion, his mouth fell open just an inch, his golden eyes twinkling with something I'd never seen there before. Or maybe I just wanted to see it, and it wasn't there after all.
Midnight blue,
he whispered,
illicit and elegant at the very same time.
I tucked a curl that had escaped from my chignon behind my ear and cleared my throat. Let's go eat. When we were walking down the hallway and toward the elevators, a thought occurred to me. It was so obvious, it made me want to laugh and cry all at once. Alex didn't want to go out. He didn't want to move around with bodyguards on his tail, and he definitely didn't want to board the rumor train and have people talking about us, especially after that picture in Greece, which Blake, of course, maintained was photoshopped every time he'd been asked about it. Thank you, I said while we were waiting for one of the elevators to ping. He grunted, knowing exactly what I was talking about. He was distracting me from thinking about Craig. He was saving me from drowning in dark thoughts about my family. He was no knight in shining armor, a far cry from a savior. He was just a broken, sad boy who was given a great gift that put him on display for the world to see and to judge. And that boy saved me that day. Again. The good thing about walking with a Londoner in London was that you saw it through their eyes. Alex knew London like an old lover, every curve and line and beauty spot, He was originally from a town on the outskirts of the English capital, but this was where he hung out. This was his domain, and he ruled it the way he did all things, mercilessly and methodically, like every inch of it was his. First, we hopped into the underground train, to which he referred to as the Tube. The bodyguards Harry and Hamish were sitting a few seats away, pretending to read a local newspaper. Alex and I sat together. And maybe it was his beanie and shades, or maybe it was just how casually he'd acted, but no one took notice of us. Once we poured out of the train at Camden Town Station and took the escalators up, we visited a little market where we inhaled two portions of vegan tacos each. They were delicious and spicy, and we washed them down with chocolate milk we'd bought at a nearby convenience store. Then Alex showed me around. He said the market was going to turn into a massive mall soon, and that he was happy he wouldn't be there to see it happening, because it was the equivalent of tearing a piece of his heart and using it as an ass transplant for a Hollywood starlet. I laughed and asked him how his soul was these days.
Good. And it will get even better once I break it to Jenna that I want to produce my own album. No more suits.
Our pinkies collided and curled around each other. No more suits. I repeated. We walked through the gray streets of Camden Town, past pubs that reeked of stale, warm beer and cigarettes. The scent of fried food constantly floated in waves, and it could have been a lot less pleasant if the air was not so fresh from the rain. We walked uphill until we reached the Cambridge Castle, a small pub with a two-floored apartment building above it.
"This is where I said I'd live if I ever made it big."
He pointed at the apartments above the red banner of the pub. "So how come you're not living there?" He shot me a look I couldn't decode, a mixture of disappointment and annoyance.
"I'm an idiot who lost sight of what's important. I really should be living there, shouldn't I?"
It looked kind of small, kind of old, and kind of stuffy, but it was a part of his dream. And when life gives you the tools to fulfill your dream, it's your duty to do so. Definitely, I nodded. Alex took my hand in his and jerked his chin to the chipped wooden door.
Drink?
Virgin, I warned.
I'll rectify it later.
We had cranberry juice and chips, see, crisps, at a secluded table. It was just us and the bartender, who was new, and even though he couldn't remember Alex's golden years at the venue, he still asked for an autograph and 5 selfies. Afterward, we took the tube to London Bridge and visited the London Dungeon. It was really scary, and I found myself jumping several times and clutching Alex's leather-clad arm. We were walking around with a group of tourists from Eastern Europe who didn't speak a word of English, which worked in our favor, though they asked for autographs and selfies too. We decided to head back to the hotel at 6 o'clock. We took a black cab, watching the streets of the capital flashing by. London was gorgeous and cruel, just like Alex. Too busy, too hectic, too brooding, too dark. Yet I couldn't help but drink her in like I did Alex, like I'd finally found the one thing I hadn't known I was missing. Alex took off his beanie for the first time since we'd left the hotel room, and his wavy, shaggy hair was sticking out to one side, which was so adorable I needed to look away to protect my heart. "I love your London," I blurted out to the window. "I love that people shoulder past me and avoid eye contact and have a no-bullshit attitude. I love that no one looks the same. I love that it's rich but grim, poor but classically beautiful. It inspires me."
"I hate your Los Angeles," he replied. "I hate how it doesn't suit you. I hate how it's flat and sparse and shallow. The agreeable weather and the big-teethed people. You deserve better, Stardust. You deserve to be inspired all the time."
"Maybe," I said. I wasn't unhappy, but I wasn't happy either. I just didn't know if Los Angeles was to blame or the general chaos that was my life. Maybe when it's all over, I'll travel from planet to planet, city to city, to find what I'm looking for.
"You should know, though."
Alex's voice sounded sad and far, like he was already drifting away from me.
"Craig is your rose. He will root you in place and never let you go. I've had these kinds of roses back at home. You don't have to put up with Craig's shit in order to still be there for Ziggy and Natasha. You need to tell him to get better, or he never will.
Turning around to look at him, I put a hand on his cheek. Are you happy, Alex?
I'm an artist. My job is not to be happy. My job is to feel, to suffer, and to conjure the same feelings in others.
I wanted to tell him he was wrong. That he could create greatness whilst holding on to his bliss. But I didn't know if it was true, and I knew better than to hand out empty promises like the ones my brother gave me. I said nothing, even when Alex slipped his hand into mine and laced our fingers together. My heart was loud enough to hear, even in the midst of London traffic, and it spoke all the words I couldn't give him. Chapter 23. Indy. The most important dance you'll have in your life is one that does not require music. Alex Winslow, Broken Hearts Boulevard. That night, he practiced what he preached. Each movement was an impulse, an instinct, a compulsion. We didn't need to practice that dance. It was a necessity, like breathing, as real as something could feel. We got into our suite silently. I walked backward as he cornered me toward the bed. Pressure was building inside me, and I knew he was the only one who'd be able to unknot it into an orgasm. His hard breaths came down on me as he peeled his jacket off and rolled the zipper of my dress down all the way to my tailbone, where he stopped, pressing a teasing finger to the slit between my ass cheeks until he pushed me toward him, my stomach meeting his throbbing erection. His skin burned with an animalistic need, and I touched him everywhere to make sure he was real. He felt so alive under my fingertips, so terribly human despite his godlike status. The pressure between my legs became agonizing before my panties dropped to the floor. I don't remember how we got naked. I just remember how it felt a second before he laid me on the bed. Final. It felt so final, like there was no going back from this. Without words, without a warning, and without a condom, he hovered above me, his dick poking at my belly. He put his hot lips on my neck and sucked on it with a private smile I could feel, and I stared at the ceiling, my pulse rioting all over my body. It was like my heart was working on overdrive, desperately pumping blood into the rest of me, trying to match how alive Alex was in that moment. He positioned himself between my thighs, his tongue swirling over my throat, driving me mad. I clawed at his back like he was already inside me. In a way, he was. Condom? My voice was barely audible. I had to repeat the word to make sure he heard me. We need a condom. He leaned back and stared at me, flushed. His chest was moving up and down, and I wanted to believe it wasn't like this for him with all one-night stands. There was no way Alex Winslow responded like this to every girl he rolled between his sheets, like I was the very asteroid where he wanted to live on. Forever.
I'll finish out.
Alex, what the hell?
I just really need to feel you.
You will, through a condom.
No, all of you.
You can't have all of me. But even I knew that was a lie. I wondered if he really expected me to agree to go bareback our first time while he picked up his jeans from the floor and sorted through the pockets until he found his wallet. There was one condom there, just the one, and the wrapper looked crumpled and old. My heart cartwheeled happily at that. I watched as he sheathed himself, his eyes focused on the condom he rolled over his shaft, upper teeth biting his lower lip, before he returned his gaze to me, his cock pressed onto my lower belly.
Stardust,
he breathed, shaking his head slightly.
Stardust, stardust, stardust.
Then he thrust into me all at once. I whimpered, threading my fingers in his hair and bringing him down, his forehead pressing into mine. I chattered, Alex. He thrust, again, then again. His movements were rough and calloused. Every time he drove into me, his hips ground on mine painfully, like he wanted me to feel how he felt, trapped inside his body, inside his thoughts. I had no illusions about Alex's nature. He was an addict and a tortured soul, and he wasn't going to stick around. But this felt like everything I didn't know I could wish for. This made me settle for now, instead of forever.
Christ,
he muttered, his lips on mine, then on my chin, my ear, back up on my cheek. We were a heap of flesh and limbs. I felt him rattling something inside me, and my womb clenched every time he pushed into me. He grabbed one of my legs and hoisted it over his shoulder, sliding even deeper than before, and I cried out so loud I was sure every resident in the hotel could hear me. It's so intense. I sucked in a breath, but that only made him go even harder. He knew what I needed. We always knew what the other needed. That was the tragic thing about us. We were so compatible in so many ways, and used ourselves as weapons against each other. I'm going to come. My body was quivering from the inside. Goosebumps crawled over my skin as tiny, steady, hot waves of pleasure began to wash through me, head to toe. I'm coming. I threw my head back and shuddered in his arms, feeling like a lit match.
Fuck. If we don't change position, I'll come too.
He growled, flipping me over on my knees and driving into me again. My mouth dropped open in pleasure. Alex snaked his arm around my waist and started playing with my clit, nibbling on my earlobe. I knew he was going to say something. He took special pleasure in talking into my ear like that when I couldn't see him, when I was at his mercy.
Come for me again, Stardust,
he said, fucking me mercilessly. And tears pooled in my eyes. It felt so intimate and promising, and he knew how I'd felt about empty promises.
Come all over my cock like the good, bad girl that you are.
I came again, falling to the mattress with a thud, as he continued driving into me and playing with me at the same time, the overstimulation making me twitch now.
Fuck, fuck, fuck.
He drove into me once more, jerking inside me and slapping my ass at the same time as he collapsed over me, his entire weight on my back. He stayed inside me, little grunts of pleasure escaping his lips, his chest plastered over my back. I wanted to turn around and look at him, but I couldn't move. I should start asking you for rent money if you decide to stay on top of me any longer. You're not light, Alex, I grunted softly. He laughed and slapped my ass playfully again, rolling on the bed, pulling out of me gently.
You should. I'd pay good money to stay in this position.
He went for the pack of cigarettes on the nightstand, but I put my hand on his arm, stopping him. Our eyes locked. We're sharing a room now. I wanted to tell you earlier when you lit one up, but I was too busy with the Craig thing. You can smoke on the patio, not here.
Is this a joke?
He said, looking incredulous. It didn't matter that he paid for the room. I was the one who was going to need to pay for the medical bills when I got cancer from all the secondhand smoke. I'd like to believe my sense of humor is better than that, I replied. He stood up, still butt naked, and walked to the balcony with his pack of cigarettes. His dong was swinging from side to side, and it would look ridiculous and embarrassing on anyone else, but not on a rock star. No, Alex looked perfectly confident and horrendously cool. Wear something, I called out from the bed, wrapping my chest in a white sheet. He whirled and walked backward, smoothly opening the giant glass door as he flashed me a wolfish grin, canine teeth galore.
Why, I'm wearing the most beautiful thing one could wear, darling. My smile.
Alex. The problem with the world is when you're having fun, days seem to stick together into lumps. But when you're miserable and alone, every day is a year, an island, a padded room you cannot get away from. 3 days had passed since I'd gotten into Indigo Bellamy's panties. 3 days in which I'd made it a point to drive into her in every position angle and location in Greater London. We shagged in the jacuzzi, twice, taking a shower, three times, in bed, four times, and in a black cab, one time. And I'd had to stuff her face with a Mind the Gap shirt while she was sitting on top of me wearing a long dress. We went sightseeing. We visited my old Clapham neighborhood. And other times we just stayed in our room, fucking or watching reruns of The Mighty Bush and Never Mind the Buzzcocks, both of which she thoroughly enjoyed. Fallon always thought my favorite shows were stupid. Though, to be completely honest, Fallon was the least of my worries in London. For the first time in years, I actually enjoyed myself. I even answered Blake's calls, though I did keep it professional and curt. Alfie dropped by our hotel room one day and bought Afghan food, which we all ate on the floor, watching Shaun of the Dead. I couldn't be mad at the tosser. He literally had the social awareness of a chapstick. Then on the fourth day, Indy nudged me.
Your parents. We need to go visit them.
Right. I didn't know what bothered me more. The way she'd included herself in the plan to go and see them. Why wouldn't she, you wanker? She's your babysitter. It's strictly business. Or the fact she would actually meet my train wreck of a family. I rang my mum up while Indy was in the shower that morning, and, of course, she was delighted with the news.
I saw you were in the UK in them tabloids, love. Was wondering whether you were going to ring us or not. I'm glad you did.
She snapped her gum in my ear. I didn't dwell on the fact she hadn't bothered to call me, even though she'd known I was there. As long as I threw money my family's way every now and again and stayed out of their way, they were all right with my existence. I exhaled loudly and tossed myself on the bed, staring at the chandelier. I'm not coming there alone, I warned, my way of telling her she needed to behave for a change. My parents cheated on each other all the time. It was such an ordinary thing. Cheating might not be the word I was looking for. I could count at least six times in which Mum and Dad aired their dirty laundry, literally, in front of the entire neighborhood, on the street. They lived in a semi-detached on a busy Watford Road where everybody knew everybody. They loved yelling at each other at the top of their lungs with people gathering at their windowsills and doors, peeking through curtains. If you ever wondered who those people who go on Ricky Lake, Jerry Springer and Jeremy Kyle are, they were my parents. That's who. The worst part was they cheated on each other with local folks too. So it was all a big, hot mess of middle-aged people who looked like they'd missed every single dentist appointment ever booked for them.
Is that the lady friend we've been seeing in the papers?
Mum asked, half laughing like a hyena. What was so funny? Maybe the fact Indy was the exact opposite of Fallon. Tall, curvy, blonde Fallon, who looked like a carbon copy of every Victoria's Secret model from the last 5 years. Indy had blue hair and funny dresses, and enough personality in her scrawny figure to stuff 100 Fallons. Yeah, I ground out, narrowing my eyes. That's the one.
A bit of a funny thing, ain't she?
I could practically hear my mum filing her pink acrylic nails while she popped her gum once again. And this, ladies and gents, was why I chose narcotics over people. I expect you to behave when she's there, I warned, my voice dripping ice.
Stop talking like you're the parent here,
she cried, adding as an afterthought,
I should ask Carly and the wee ones to come on over.
I loved my sister's kids. They reminded me of myself with George. They were incredibly smart and perceptive. Dwayne was a little terror, but he had good rhythm and could probably be a great guitarist if he ever got a guitar. He would, I promised myself. And I wouldn't let him read a book 500 times before I gave it to him. Chase was sweet and sensitive, kind of like how I would have been had my parents not dented me so thoroughly. Bentley was a proper comedian, even at the tender age of 8. The only part I didn't like about this idea was seeing their mother and my sister, Carly. Yeah, I said. Anyway, watching Indy walk out of the shower wrapped in a towel only, my lazy gaze following her every movement. Sure, it'd be great to see her. I'm calling a cab now, so... Clean up the piglet. Get ready, aight?
Aight.
Mum laughed, then hung up.
You ready?
Indy smiled at me. Never. I didn't know why she'd laughed. It wasn't supposed to be funny.
Chapter 24 Indy. Jenna. Indy, what do you want to be when you grow up? Indy, thrift shop owner. Indy, why? Jenna, no reason. Hudson.
Aw, Indy, that's random. LOL, Jenna, how's the baby?
Jenna, shut up, Hudson. Indy, have you talked to Blake yet? Jenna, no, but he suspects something is up. Hudson.
Why?
Jenna, because I can't help but be nice to him. Because I cried the other day when we talked on the phone and he was online shopping for his niece's birthday. Indy, so what's the problem? He's obviously into you. Jenna, he's also obviously 11 years younger than me. Indy, tell him. I feel bad not telling Alex. Hudson.
As you should. He's crazy about you.
Jenna. Question mark, question mark, question mark? Indy. Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark? Hudson.
Yes. Every time he talks about you, he doesn't even sneer. It's weird. Last time he spoke that way about something, it was about Jack White's acoustic recordings album.
Indy. Does he talk about me a lot? Hudson.
A gentleman never tells.
Jenna. What about you, Hudson? Are you dating someone? Hudson.
Only my left hand and a Neil Patrick Harris poster.
Jenna. Sad. Hudson.
Less complicated than your situation, girl.
Indy. What did you want to be when you grew up when you were a kid, Jenna? Jenna. An astronaut. The black cab stopped in front of the red door. Hamish and Harry nodded us a somber goodbye from the front seats. Alex figured he didn't need an entourage, seeing as he was just visiting his family. On our way to Watford in the cab, we'd negotiated the time and length of the visit.
3 hours, Stardust. A minute more and I'm dragging you by the hair.
He looked out of the window. Tapping his foot on the floor, his black wayfarers giving him an extra layer of asshole. I think you'd very much like dragging me by the hair, I remarked, flipping a fashion magazine. It was amazing how small things brought so much color into my life. I would have never bought a Vogue magazine in Los Angeles, but now I had some pocket money. Also, Blake was very good at shoving his business credit card at the cashier every time I tried to pay for my stuff at airport kiosks.
Of course, but I wasn't planning on doing it until after dinner, he said.
I laughed. He was so wrong in thinking he wasn't lovable. Alex was lovable to a fault. The Winslow's front yard was neglected, with bald patches and beer cans peppered throughout the thin grass. We sat in the cab for a few seconds before Alex pushed the door open. I followed him out, and we both made our way, burrowing into our coats. The house looked depressing. Everything was either peeling or torn. I spared him from that observation. I didn't live in a mansion either. I love the little church across the road. I jerked my thumb behind my shoulder, anything to make him feel slightly more at ease. He squinted at it, his gorgeous face twitching. This man was inside me. The thought, creepy as it sounded, made my heart warm. And I think a part of me is inside him, too.
That's where Father John touched me.
His lips flattened into a scowl. My eyes widened at his admission before he rolled his eyes and pinched my ass.
You should have seen your face.
I want to punch your face.
Let's settle for you sitting on my face tonight. Now come on, let's get it over with.
Alex's parents, Louisa and Jim, both looked like older, bloated versions of him. His father was pasty white, with a pink nose of someone who always had a bottle of something strong in his hand, but also had the same sharp-cut lines, strong jaw and square chin. His mother's body was wrinkly, tan, and plump, but her tawny eyes were bright, mischievous, and compelling. The house was cluttered with stuff. Useless stuff. Stuff you order from the shopping channel. Carly, his sister, had highlights in her chestnut hair and wore bubblegum lipstick and matching sweatpants, and her kids, all between the ages of 4 and 9, looked so different from each other, I found it easy to remember their names. We sat at the dining room table and ate industrial mashed potatoes and a roast. Louisa had microwaved the entire meal, coughing into it in the process of serving it to us. They cracked open a few cans of beers, which made me want to cry for Alex. Every time someone took a sip, I balled my fists and tried breathing through the pain.
"So, Indigo?"
His dad rolled my name like it was a bad joke. I locked my spine, raising my chin high. I would not be ridiculed about my name. I didn't choose it, and frankly would never change it. It was one of the most important pieces of memory I had from my parents. Bonus points, Blue really was a fantastic